Good afternoon. This is Pat Moore. I'll be your host today on Juno Afternoon. My guests will include Alexander Tutinov, Jeffrey Clough from the Eagle Crest. We'll have Virginia Stonkus and a couple of students from the Rotary Youth Exchange program with us today. And we'll close out the show with Ed Littlefield, whose amalgam of traditional Tlingit lullabies and jazz will be performing tonight at the Jack. Juneau area weather, mostly cloudy, a few sprinkles tonight, highs around 54, southeast winds to 15 miles per hour, and tonight it'll develop into rain. We'll have lows around 43, east winds to 15 miles per hour.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Last month, three Rapid City, South Dakota police officers were shot while on duty. Two of them died. Native American police honored the deceased with eagle feathers, which were placed in their caskets and buried. That led to outrage among some Lakota spiritual leaders. Victoria Wicks has more on the controversy.
People gathering for a recent Black Hills Sioux Nation Treaty Council meeting don't agree whether it's okay to give an eagle feather as a gift to non-Indians, but they overwhelmingly agree that the feather is never to be buried. Tom Poorbear is vice president of the Oglala Sioux Tribe.
We also look at the eagle as freedom, and we never bury our freedom. Our freedom should always be with us. Those eagle feathers should never have been buried.
When the controversy first broke, some Lakota people lodged complaints with the Rapid City Chief of Police, who turned to South Dakota's U.S. Attorney for an opinion. Brendan Johnson says that the gift of feathers did not violate federal law, and the dispute is a religious matter to be resolved by Native Americans.
For me, the bottom line is, was a federal law violated? It clearly was not. Therefore, it is not my place to inject myself into the Native American religion and to determine what is and what is not an appropriate exercise of that religion.
Another spiritual absolute is the sanctity of burial places, and Tom Poorbear says the deceased must now be allowed to rest.
Exhuming the bodies is not an answer. I wouldn't want to put any more sadness or hurt into the families of these officers of what they're going through already.
Poorbear says the spirits of all those who died and their relatives should be honored to allow healing to begin. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Tribal leaders testified on Capitol Hill this week about the need for Congress to send Indian Country more money for road and bridge projects. Matt Laszlo reports.
President Obama's jobs proposal includes tens of billions of dollars for infrastructure projects across the nation. Tribal leaders say that money could do wonders in their backyards. Tribal transportation projects are backlogged to the tune of $70 billion. Jefferson Keel, president of the National Congress of the American Indians, says investing in tribal roads will create jobs.
Indian Country gets more out of every transportation dollar because so much of what we do is infrastructure development. When we pave a dirt road or build a new bridge, there are immediate and profound effects on the economy, on the businesses, and on the lives of the very people that we are representing.
Improving roads and bridges is about more than jobs, though, according to the president of the Intertribal Transportation Association, John Healy.
Maintaining a good, safe transportation system is vital, not only to economic development, but for the safety of our children. Safety is a key issue for Indian Country, as well as the ambulances traveling these roads, school buses.
Republicans complain the president's plan to invest in infrastructure won't create jobs, and House leaders say they oppose those provisions of the legislation. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
A New Mexico State University professor is awarded more than $300,000 to help the Mescalero Apache tribe preserve and maintain its language. NMSU announced this week Professor Scott Rushforth received the grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. The funding will help the linguist and the tribe's language program develop a dictionary, grammar, and multimedia archive. It's estimated there are fewer than 200 fluent Apache speakers from the Mescalero Reservation. On this day in 2010, Taos Pueblo began 2 days of events to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the return of the tribe's sacred Blue Lake from the federal government. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice 1. The Native American Radio Service.
Well, it's 3:05 here at KTOO. My first guest on Juno Afternoon today is pianist Alexander Tutanov. Welcome, man.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you have a concert coming up tonight at the University of Alaska Southeast.
I believe so, 7 p.m.
And it's not only a concert, according to the news releases I've seen and the posters I've seen, it's also a lecture as well.
This is my pleasure to open a kick off the season of Evening at Egan lectures that are quite popular in town. And of course, somebody who, you know, not even a native speaker, and basically my piano is better than my English. That's not saying much, but still. And yet I've discovered that I always like to talk about the things I play, and sometimes it's not necessarily the formal stuff. It was written this year, and this is the ABA formal structure. No, it's, you know, why I want to play it and how long I worked on it and what goes through my head when I play it, stuff like that.
It sounds like a fascinating glimpse into what your art, how your art goes together, I guess would be a way to put it.
That's the goal.
And now, it's unusual. We don't have a whole bunch of famous concert pianists who are residents of Juno or who are in Juno as much as you are. I'm wondering how this connection between you and Alaska has developed and what brings you to us so often.
It's quite an amazing story. I just looked back. This has been advertised as the last year of Tutanov in Juno because turns out it's my sixth, I believe, year of coming four times every year and working with the local musicians, not even necessarily the pianists. They don't even have to play. On Saturdays when I'm here, I work in a group setting and we choose those who want to play, or they choose themselves rather, and then the others observe an open lesson in a friendly environment, and we talk about stage fright and how to memorize and how to understand the music deeper, how to avoid the professional injuries, design of the composition, music theory, anything that comes to mind. We've done quite a number of discussions.
Now you're describing a master class that you're going to conduct tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the first in this school year.
And is that's all full, right? No one could get into it now? Or?
Absolutely. Au contraire. It's actually quite available for audits, and people can even, I believe, drop in and just fill out some paperwork. They can come to one or to all four, which, I don't know, they would have to talk to the assistant there. Her name is Virginia Berg, and she graciously agreed that I give out her phone number. So we'll do it at the end of the interview. Mm-hmm. And also, this will have been probably my 10th year since I was introduced to Juno, because my dear friend and colleague, who happens to be a conductor here of the symphony, Kyle Wiley Pickett, had brought me here as a soloist with the symphony, and that was a 2001-2002 season, I believe. And I fell in love with Juno. I wouldn't be lying if I said that in my many visits here, I'm yet to see a rain here. So you may consider offering me to stay here permanently.
Well, it never rains in Juneau, so that must be why you're having that experience.
Well, that's what I'm beginning to think. It's probably some gimmick, because every time I'm here, it's a bright sunshine, or at least no rain.
So do you come from a place where it's dry? Do you bring that in with you?
It's pretty dry. It's southern Oregon, where my home base is now, town of Ashland, and so it's basically northern California weather, so a little bit higher, a little bit drier, and especially in the summer. It's probably about 90 right now.
Ashland is the home of probably one of the premier Shakespearean theaters in the United States. Do you have an association with that, with them?
Yes, pretty much every year they would. It's quite amazing. One year I taught myself to play accordion to be on stage in a show called As You Like It by some fellow named Shakespeare.
Oh, him, yes.
And then another year I recorded the music for Uncle Vanya, the Chekhov's play. And the third year, Pride and Prejudice, that was actually last year, I trained the actors to fake playing the piano that I recorded previously. And so the piano was at an angle where they couldn't see, the audience couldn't see the hands. So everybody said it was quite believable.
And you were playing the piano?
On the recording, but the actors were moving as if they were. So for each particular song, I coached this particular cast member for, you know, how to fake it.
So it sounds like Ashland is maybe competing for your love. It sounds like you have a really rich artistic life there.
Yes, I love it. I think that saying "time flies when you're having fun." This is going to be my 14th year in Ashland, and it just flies by.
Now, you grew up in the Soviet Union when it was still the Soviet Union. I think Westerners have a vision that artists particularly were very coddled in the Soviet Union, but were also expected, a great deal was expected of them. Was that your experience?
Yes. My early training, the childhood training, even when I was 6 and 7 and 8, is unbelievable. When they always mentioned the teacher-student ratio, student-teacher ratio. We had maybe 3.5 teachers per student, per one student, including the people who observed us in the boarding school, where we would, you know, be taken from our families. And in my particular case, it was an overnight train ride to go home. And so, of course, we stayed at the school, and all the subjects, all the disciplines, were taught there, and then we would come back to our dorms and would practice, and there would be highly trained teachers observing how we practice, and not a minute would be lost. And then we had the sister school that was the Bolshoi Theater Ballet, Academic Ballet of Russia, and we would mingle and we would see every show they would do. And we thought that every child was like that. So it wasn't anything special. But then, of course, it's an incredible feeling when the government just says, okay, now it's your turn to go and shine and play with orchestra somewhere in Italy. That's like the enemy. They are capitalists, you know, so you better do a great job, win the gold medal, or... Don't bother, basically.
Yeah.
So, of course, in so many words, I never felt violated, but it was a pride, the opportunity that was given to me with the highest level of education, the artistic level.
Well, it's wonderful. I'd love to talk with you for much, much longer, but I know you have a busy schedule getting ready for this evening. What all will you be performing tonight?
Looking for an opportunity to make this program, appeal to the audiences and finding some kind of a gimmick. This year marks 200th anniversary of Franz Liszt, And so people associate the name of List with various things, but mostly, you know, he was even called the Liberace of 19th century showman. But there's much more to him, and so my goal was to show different sides of Liszt. So I will play a couple compositions that would show his lyric gift and some music that describes his mystic gifts and then his nationalists. But then, of course, I will play other things, and I figured it would be a nice segue to play some French music, Debussy, because Liszt did spend some time in France and wrote different music from what's considered French music. So I play Debussy, and then I'll, of course, switch to my specialty, which is, well, people label me as a Russian music specialist, so I'll play Soviet music, this Prokofiev's dissonant, yet absolutely beautiful, exciting, powerful sonata for piano number 7, which is called the War Sonata, and if you come, you'll understand why.
What time does the concert begin?
I believe it's 7 p.m., and it's in the library. The wonderful folks at UAS, starting with John Pugh, and of course wonderful new dean, Marcia Souza, and all the humanities department, I don't know, they've embraced me for 5 years in a row. That's not an easy task, tell you the truth. But they moved the piano to the Egan Library, and put it in the riser there, and so it would be a better acoustics, and it will fit 3 times more people if people are interested in coming.
I suspect you will probably have a packed house. I want to go back real quickly to the master class, because we said we'd give a phone number. So for the master classes that you're conducting tomorrow during the day.
It's actually morning. We start at 9 a.m. and we'll go probably till we get hungry, lunch, okay. Something like that.
And these are open to musicians. You don't have to be a pianist. You don't have to be, you don't even have to play.
One condition, you have to love music. And there would be some paperwork involved if I understand correctly. But again, they can just walk in. There will be, you know, they'll be embraced. And all the dates for the remaining, well, actually 4 classes throughout this academic year are offered at 1 credit, I think, at UAS. And you can also come as an auditor. And Virginia Berg will take good care of you, and her number.
Her telephone number is 796-6405, and she is the person in charge of the humanities program, or the receptionist for the humanities.
She runs basically this masterclass. She's the one I usually talk to when I need to know anything.
Wonderful. So if someone wants to take part in that, they can call that number. Alexander, thank you so much for taking time out of your preparation and coming down and joining us.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you.
It's 19 minutes after 3 in the afternoon. I'm Pat Moore. I'm your host for Juno Afternoon today. My guests now in the studio are Jeffra Clow, who's been here several times before, I think, to talk about Eagle Crest, and a man who has not been here several times before to talk about Eagle Crest, Matt Lillard, who is the new general manager, I guess, or what is your title?
General manager, that's correct.
General manager of Eagle Crest. And this, there's an interesting story involved in this. I understand that there was a family emergency that arose in the gentleman who was going to become the general manager, and suddenly you got a phone call and they said, Matt, was that how it went?
Basically, correct. We were all up here for an assessment center process in mid-July, myself and four other candidates, and at the end of that process, unfortunately, I was not offered the job, and it kind of, while disappointed, and moved on and started to get ready for that ski area that I was at back in Vermont. And Saturday afternoon, I got a phone call. I was about to sit down to dinner.
Saturday, last Saturday.
Correct, last Saturday. And from Kirk Duncan, the outgoing general manager, and got back in touch with him on Sunday and started talking about where they were and where I was and whether or not I was still interested, and I was, and here I am.
Well, and just in time, as I understand it, for Discover Eagle Crest Day, which, Jeffra, you have some details on what's going to happen. I guess that's tomorrow?
That is tomorrow, Pat, and I just want to say it's great to have Matt with us, and it's great to have him on board with the team and be able to meet the community at Discover Eagle Crest Day, which is tomorrow. It's the third annual Discover Eagle Crest Day, and it's a time when we start to say goodbye to summer. Enjoy Eagle Crest and explore Eagle Crest in the fall and start looking towards winter. And it starts tomorrow morning at 10:30, and there's just a variety of activities that goes on, everything from chairlift rides, and there's going to be rentals from Cycle Alaska. Alaska Zipline Adventures is doing specially priced zip tours. The Juneau Freewheelers are doing the Eagle Crest Mountain Tour of Eagle Crest, Mountain Bike Tour of Eagle Crest. And there's just a lot going on. The Baranoff is doing a beer and wine garden and an all-American Alaskan barbecue. So it's just going to be a great time on the mountain, Pat.
So this starts at 10:30 on Saturday morning.
On Saturday. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And is there are there charges for these events, or is this?
Some things are free. Like you can come on up, and if you have never ridden the Porcupine Lift or Beginner Lift, you can come on up and ride that for free. And Cycle Alaska is doing their bike rentals for $5 an hour. The Baranoffs, the beer and wine garden, and the barbecue are specially priced just for our event. It's a great time. And, of course, as I said, we're starting to look towards winter. Perfect time to get your season pass, your multi-visit cards. We're also offering our $100 gift cards for $90. So
there's discounts on...
Yeah, a lot of discounts up on the mountain. Just a great time to come on up and... explore Eagle Crest. If you've never been up there, a perfect time to come up and see what we're all about. And we're going to have music by Tramwreck that'll run from 12:30 to 2 o'clock on tomorrow afternoon. Tramwreck is the name of the band.
Okay. No, I understood that. I was wondering who it is. Do you know them?
It's, and I must apologize that I think the band members are kind of fluid. So I'm not exactly sure who's in the band, but they have played for us before. We're very well received. They offer a variety of music, folk, oldies, rock, and bluegrass. So we're pretty excited to have them join us up in the mountain again.
Okay. Can I go back for a couple of moments here to Matt? You're coming to us from?
Vermont.
Vermont. Were you managing a ski area there?
I was. Assistant General Manager and Marketing Director at a small ski area called Magic Mountain.
Compared to Eagle Crest, size-wise, number of people?
Size-wise and infrastructure-wise, it's very similar, actually. The same amount of vertical feet and generally the same number of chairlifts and skier visits. So infrastructure-wise and size-wise, it's very similar, which is nice.
Was the community isolated like Juneau is?
No, it's in southern Vermont, so... Instead of being isolated, we're 3 hours from the big metropolises of Boston and New York City, and so it has its different market segments that we pull from, which is a very different situation than from Eagle Crest.
Now, the season here, there's always this debate about should I buy a season pass or not, because the season may be an hour and a half. Not quite, but it could be very short or it could be very long. What does it take to open Eagle Crest for skiing?
Well, it just all depends upon, first of all, it takes snow. And it depends upon what kind of snow comes in. Is it real wet snow? Is it real dry snow? And while I know Eagle Crest has this reputation, it's like, oh, man, are we going to have snow? I think over the last several years, we have really seen Mother Nature cooperate with us. But what we've also done is through some trail conditioning and some use of equipment, getting different equipment and our use of equipment, we're able to get the mountain open with much less snow than we have in the past. Perfect example is the service road that goes to the top of the mountain. That road has allowed us to be able to open earlier, just because in the past, we at the top of the mountain, we had to actually build a road out of snow. So, you know, I think all of these things have kind of fallen in place and allowed us to be able to open with a little bit less snow. We've added one more snowmaker to our fleet. And with the addition of the Porcupine Lift. So that certainly helped us make more snow around the Porcupine Lift, the beginner lift. So I think that's a huge thing for us as well.
Well, I probably shouldn't ask, Matt, but since last Saturday, have you had time to make any special plans for Eagle Crest, or has it been too busy just getting your bags packed?
Just getting my bags packed and getting up here for Discover Eagle Crest Day. I thought it was really important to try to make it and meet the community and get back in touch with everyone I'd met back up here when I was in, here in July. So it's just been a whirlwind week trying to figure out how to move from Vermont and the East Coast to Alaska and as well as just making arrangements to come here for this weekend.
Well, I guess tomorrow with all of these incredible events going up on Eagle Crest, you're going to get a chance to meet a lot of Juneau residents and show who you are and kind of see what Eagle Crest has to offer as well.
I hope so. I'll plan on being up there all day, and I'd like to meet as many people as possible, so come on out and say hi.
Good. I guess one thing we should mention, I noticed when I was looking at the previous information, the Alaska Zip Line folks have asked that people make reservations if they want to take the ride.
That is correct. And all the information for Alaska Zip Line Adventures and also our events are on our website at skijuneau.com, or you can call Alaska Zip Lines directly at 321-0947.
Okay.
But, again, visit our website, skijuneau.com, to find everything you want to know about tomorrow or Eagle Crest in general.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you, Matt, for getting off of an airplane, dashing over here. Your bags are in the hall. They delivered them while you were in here, and so we welcome you to Juneau.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Pat.
Just a little downhill fun. Snowflakes are falling. A mountain is calling. Crowd shouts out from below. 5, 4, 3, 2, all eyes upon you. Now it's time to go. Every muscle straining, 1,000 hours of training, all hanging on this run. Swearing in your stories that cheat death and glory is just a little downhill fun. Hanging by your edges, high above the ledges, every gate is just a blur. Voices calling faster, dancing with disaster, speed's the deadly lure. Every muscle straining, 1,000 hours of training, all hanging on this run. Swearing in your stories that cheat death for glory is just a little downhill fun. Just a little downhill fun.
It's 3:30 here at KTOO, and I have a studio full of guests at the moment. I'm Pat Moore. I'm the alternate host for Juno Afternoon. And in my studio right now are four people whom I'm going to ask to introduce themselves because there's a special way in which they will be doing that.
Hey, jag heter Liz. Jag var I Sverige för ett år. And, oh, yeah. Hi, I'm Elizabeth. I was in Sweden for a year.
Bonjour à tous. Je m'appelle Jericho Cristoba. J'étais en France l'année dernière. C'est très bien. J'ai appris plein de choses. Et après mon séjour en France, je parlais très bien français. Je suis très content d'être ici avec, de parler avec vous. Hi, I'm Jericho Cristobal. I was in France last year, and I'm glad to be speaking with you guys today.
Hi, jag heter Jessica. Jag kommer från Alaska. Mina syster och jag spelar I Danmark, och det var det bästa år av min liv.
Hi, my name is Jessica Sullivan, and I come from Alaska, but I spent the last year in Denmark, and it was the best year of my life.
Hi, I'm Virginia Stonkus. I'm the Youth Exchange Officer with the Juno Downtown Rotary Club, and I just speak English, unfortunately.
Oh, Virginia, I thought you'd introduce yourself in Rotarian.
that would be an interesting language, yes.
So, Virginia, why are these three students with us?
We are in the process right now of recruiting for next year's outbounds, students who are interested in wanting to go abroad for a year. We spent most of this week at JDHS, and we'll be spending most of next week at Thunder Mountain. And what we do is we're invited into the classroom by teachers who have an understanding and appreciation for the values of studying abroad. And we bring our students back into the classroom, and we have three inbound students, one from Finland, one from Poland, and one from Germany, who are also going around and talking to give students an up-close and personal understanding of the benefits, values, and opportunities to be had through youth exchange.
So now these three students that you're referring to as inbounds are students from those countries who are coming here to Juno.
That's correct.
Go to school here for a year and live with us for
how long? That's correct. They are here for a year. They will be living with three different families each. The value that we see to that from our students is you get three times the opportunity to be exposed to different views, have different opportunities, and to see a different side of the community than you would if you were just in one family for the entire year.
How did it come that you went to Denmark?
Well, with Rotary, you don't get to choose the country. They choose it for you, which is actually perfect because then you go without any expectations. And you might want to go to Europe, and instead you get sent to Indonesia or something. And so, but I was really hoping for somewhere in Europe, and but I was really open to going anywhere. But they sent me to Denmark, and that was it. It was really nerve-wracking right up until you got on the plane, and then you got on the plane, and you never want to come back.
So how long did it take you to become fluent in Danish?
Oh, everyone in Denmark speaks English, actually. So it took quite a long time, probably up until 9 months is when I felt like I had a full grasp on the language.
And when you were going to school over there as well? The school was in English?
Oh, no, the school was in Danish.
Oh, so that was, I imagine that was something of a struggle in the first couple of hours of that.
I think I was like, I sat in the front of the class just to make sure I'd get everything. And then I was sweating by the end of the class because I just didn't understand a thing and I was trying so hard. And then someone, like a guy sitting next to me, patted me on the shoulder and he's like, it's okay, don't worry about it. And I was like, oh, and I just like kind of relaxed and...
And your experience was the same in France?
In France, like Denmark, a lot of people speak English. But for me, French is like for me, it took about 3 to 4 months because there are similarities in English, and I learned a little bit of Spanish in middle school, so I had a little bit knowing, but I didn't know any French before I left. Like I learned Japanese for 2 years. So it was difficult, but after the 3 to 4 months, I started like dreaming and I started thinking in French, and it really got into my head. And right now,
yeah. And you lived with a host family. Each of you did. Did you three different host families? I'm getting hand signals here in English, which is good. Tell me a little bit about the host family experience for you.
Well, my host families, I had three host families, just like everybody else. And my first host family was amazing. Second host family, a little bit better. Third host family, even better. So You get the three host families, and it's each a different experience, and you gain so much more each time you change host families.
So you were with each family for about 3 months?
About 3 to 4 months, okay. Yes.
And living in someone else's house, I guess, what did you miss from living in your own place here?
Well, I miss my family, of course. Uh-huh. But when you go to that different host country, they're sending their kid to where you live. So it's basically like you are becoming their own.
Ah.
So you are a part of the family.
That is one of the expectations, is they're not a guest. They're not a tourist. They become part of that family.
Mm-hmm.
And they abide by the family rules. They follow the directions and guidance of their host parents because they are a part of that family.
And I guess one of the questions is, how would someone, you all obviously were first class students shining in your expect everything. How is a student chosen, or how does a student come in?
We tell our students, and we get this question a bit even at the high school level now, is we're not looking for the top athlete. We're not looking for the straight A student. We are looking for students who are genuinely interested in wanting to go abroad. Rotary program basically adopts our students as student ambassadors. For example, the young woman that our club is sponsoring this year is the first American to go to Kyrgyzstan. So she will meet many people, and she may be the first and possibly the only American that some of these will meet. And they're going to judge me and you and Alaska on what this young adult puts forth. So our emphasis is on being a student ambassador, representing our country, sharing our culture with them, and then on the return is sharing their newfound culture with us.
When you left, so you're gone for a year,
mm-hmm.
So were you able to slide back into your friendships with people here? Do you have a different circle of friends?
Well, so I kept okay contact with my friends back here in Juneau, but
how?
Facebook, Skype, but not a lot, but just like every once or twice a month. But I think that after being in a different country, it changes you a lot in so many ways you never thought possible. And coming back to your friends that are just talking about I don't know, like going to a football game or something like that. And from Europe, when you had so many other experiences, you feel really mature. And I still have the same friends, but
there are heads nodding in the studio. I should say, there's agreement among these three
people. It's just, Do you want to add or?
Well, you change, they change,
yeah.
But everything is still the same.
Yeah.
In a weird sort of weird way, but I think that. You see what they don't see. That's basically.
I just wanted to say, before, I think when all of us left on exchange, it's like we pressed pause on our lives on
mm-hmm.
Juneau, in Juneau, and then lived a new life in another country, had an amazing time, came back and pressed play, and it was all the same. So.
But all different.
But all different. We all feel different. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that your experience as well?
Yeah, because you experience so many things that you'd never be able to experience in Juneau. You talk to your friends back here, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, we went to Pelmini's today, and it was really fun. And you're like, I went sailing to Germany today, and then I got to go to Berlin. And it doesn't compare. You have so many opportunities when you go on exchange.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
We had the University of Alaska president address our group 1 year with all of our students together, and he said if he had had any applications on him at the time, he would hand them out to our rebounds and accept them unconditionally because they are exactly what an admissions officer.
Rebounds?
These are rebounds.
The returning student.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Because this is an admissions officer's dream. They've already demonstrated incredible responsibility, accountability, critical thinking. They've been able to negotiate around the world on their own in a different culture. And it's the same thing with the world of work when we talk to folks with the Juneau Economic Development Council, where this is what an employer is looking for, is someone who has taken this initiative and done extremely well.
I sense someone out there listening to us who's saying this would be a wonderful opportunity for someone. So the question is then, what do they do?
First and easiest thing right now is the three Rotary Clubs in Juneau are having an international potluck this coming Sunday evening from 5 to 7 at the Jack. We're going to be serving international foods from all the cultures that we have.
Are you cooking a French dish for this?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So you're actually cooking?
Yeah.
The three of you are?
I learned a lot.
Oh, yeah.
We're all like chefs now.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be in the White House.
I'm being put on.
Okay. So that's the one, and the one most public thing. And again, we've been in the high school at JDEHS all week, and handing out applications, and students who have interested have taken them. But if you want to contact me directly, again, my name is Virginia Stankus, and you can reach me at my email, which is peoples, P-E-E-P-L-E-S, at gci.net. My phone number is 723-8166. And if you want to know more about Rotary Youth Exchange in general, go to www.rotaryinternational.com. On students and exchange.
Wonderful. It sounds like you had an incredibly rich experience, and now you're all qualified chefs, so you can cook for the dinner on Sunday night, which I think is a good byproduct of the Rotary program. Thank you so much for coming down and sharing this with us.
Merci beaucoup à tous.
Thank you for having us.
Je ne sais vibrer qu'en paratonnerre, je suis condamnée à l'éclair, la poudre éphémère, car si l'on m'aime, l'on doit me consumer, mais demain, oui demain, j'en fais le serment. J'ouvrirai les yeux, mes deux yeux tout en grand, sur un bel homme, un bel amant, qui laissera ma vie sauter.
The 22nd annual barn dance season opens this Saturday, September 17th at St. Anne's Parish Hall downtown on 5th and Gold. Tom Paul will kick off the big night at 7:30, teaching and calling contra dances to live old-time and bluegrass music by Jerry Fiscus and friends. As always, you don't need any experience or a partner, just be ready for a good time and a friendly atmosphere. Discounts for students and seniors and free for Saga and JVs. Big barn dance this Saturday. For more information, call 463-3214.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 16th of September, 2011. It's the birthday of King Henry V of England. He was born around 1386 in Monmouth, Wales. 2 years after he ascended to the throne, he defeated the French at the Battle of Agincourt in 1415 in the Hundred Years' War. And the French lands that he won from that battle made England one of the strongest kingdoms in Europe. It was Henry V who promoted the use of English as the language of record instead of Norman French, and he was the first English king to use English exclusively in his correspondence. It was on this day, 1620, the Mayflower set sail for America, a 90-foot ship carrying 102 settlers, about half of them were Puritans, the religious separatists, to the New World. They were bound for a tract of land which had been set aside for them along the Hudson River, but they hit bad weather, they were blown off course, and they made landfall on Cape Cod instead. Only about half of them survived the first winter, but when the Mayflower went back to England in the spring, none of them took the opportunity to go back to England. Today's the birthday of H. A. Rey, R-E-Y, born Hans Augusto Reiersbach in Hamburg, Germany, 1898. He and his wife Margaret, German Jews, living in Paris, 1939, when World War II began, they were working on a book Hans Rey was an artist, and he was doing drawings of a mischievous monkey. By June 1940, it was clear that Paris was in danger from the Nazis, and so Hans built two bicycles out of spare parts, and he and Margaret gathered their belongings, including the monkey drawings. They left Paris 2 days before the Nazis arrived. They rode 75 miles in 3 days. They got to Lisbon, then sailed to Rio, and then to New York. The drawings of the little monkey were proof of their occupation, and that helped them get visas. And their first book, Curious George, was published in this country in 1941. And it was on this day, 1966, the Metropolitan Opera House opened at Lincoln Center in New York, replacing the old building at 39th and Broadway. The opening was sort of a disaster. Samuel Barber's opera Antony and Cleopatra. A lot of people on stage, the brand new turntable broke down, and soprano Leontine Price was trapped inside a pyramid at one point. Here's a poem for today by Louise Erdrich, The Glass and the Bowl. The father pours the milk from his glass into the cup of the child, and as the child drinks the whiteness, opening her throat to the good taste eagerly, the father is filled. He closes the refrigerator on its light. He walks out under the bowl of frozen darkness, and nothing seems withheld from him. Overhead, the burst ropes of stars, the buckets of craters, the chaos of heaven, absence of refuge in the design. Yet down here, his daughter, in her quilts, under patterns of diamonds and novas, full of rich milk, sleeping. The Glass and the Bowl by Louise Erdrich, from Baptism of Desire, published by Harper Perennial, and used by permission here in the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts in Poetry Out Loud, a national poetry recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
It's 3:47 here at KTOO in Juneau. I'm Pat Moore. I'm the guest host this afternoon on Juno Afternoon, and my guest at the studio at the moment is Ed Littlefield.
Hello.
And Ed is here to talk a little bit about a concert that's going to happen tonight, I think, Ed?
Tonight, 8 p.m. at the Jack, yeah. Juneau Arts and Culture Center.
And this concert is going to feature music from a CD that you record, from several of your CDs, I think, across, and it's a quartet, right?
Yeah,
Who are the other guys?
Yeah, we call it the Native Jazz Quartet, and I can talk more about that whole concept of why we call it Native. But Native Jazz Quartet, for this Alaskan tour, we're featuring two CDs, one of New York bassist Christian Fabian. He plays in the Lionel Hampton Big Band and all over the place, all over the country and internationally. And his record is called West Coast Session, and we're all the quartet is on that album. And then featuring my music from Walking Between Worlds, which was recorded, you know, a day earlier than his, using the same people. And the other people are Ruel Lubog from Seattle, and he's a great player. He's played with the Glenn Miller Orchestra, Tommy Dorsey Orchestra, you know, and toured the country playing music. And then our featured guest artist is Jason Marsalis of the fairly well-known Marsalis family. If you're into jazz, you know the name Marsalis. So he is really happy to be here. He's feeling a little under the weather. He was going to try and be here for this radio interview, but we want to save him for the show tonight. So
the quartet is drums, vibes, the other two instruments?
Yeah, and piano and bass.
Piano and bass.
Yeah, so we've got,
a little unusual. No, no winds, no...
No horns, yeah, no horns. I actually, it's funny, Christian recommended getting Jason to be on the record in October, you know, actually a couple months before that. But I said, that's phenomenal. I love the sound of Vibes, and he plays them so good, so well. And it's great. You can be both soulful and dynamic. When the vibraphone, the actual vibrating part is working, it sounds amazing. So, and he's just a wealth of knowledge and styles. You can play all kinds of different styles. So it should be a great concert tonight.
Now, I'm sitting here looking at the album that you talked about, and
yeah.
On the front of that album are these two silver-looking, almost like chunks out of a totem pole.
Yeah.
And this thing is called Walking Between Worlds.
Right.
So tell me about this. What worlds are we walking between, Ed?
Well,
and why are we walking between them?
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Sitka. I'm Tlingit and some other things, like most people are. But I was raised as culturally as I could in Sitka. And I learned these songs that I were doing tonight as a child, you know, from recordings. And both my mom, Robbie Littlefield, recorded these songs from an elder, Charlie Joseph, who kind of brought these songs back. And they're children's songs, they're lullabies. And I've tried to, you know, learn these and work on these for years. And then I said, ooh, look at the drums. Those are cool. You know, the Western drums, the drum set. And I started focusing on that. And for about 10 years, I pretty much focused on that. And then in between about 4 or 5 years, I was trying to be a freelance artist. You know, after I started playing, I said, all right, how can we make this work for, you know, as a business? How can I become a, you know, an artist, a paid artist? So I've been doing that. And then I said, wait a second. I've been forgetting the first part of my, you know, education. And that first part is being cultural and remembering who you are. So I started this project maybe about 2 or 3 years ago in my own head, working on transcribing Tlingit lullabies, which are called tlegus, for a possible book. And then I said, wait a second, I can use these to make an arrangement of them, you know, because I'd studied jazz and studied music in college. And did some touring, and all of a sudden I was like, wow, this is great. Why don't we combine these? And so we tried this experiment last summer with Christian Fabian, and I said, hey, I got this idea. You know, you want to play a tune like in 2 days? And I wrote out a tune the next day. I wrote out the hook song, actually, and I arranged it for a quartet of vibes, you know, piano, bass, and drums, and it was a hit, man. It felt really, really good. And I just said, this has got to be it. You know, we got to do this. This is what it's all about. So
the hook song is a Tlingit lullaby.
Yeah.
Does it have words?
And I'm finding out, I don't want to say too much, but yeah, about this, because I'm finding some new things about that actually just recently. But Claire Paradovich, was the teacher of that, her mother, Claire Paradovich, from Klowoc, mm-hmm. and I learned it from Charlie Joseph. So in my impression, there was a northern and southern part of that, northern version and a southern version. But it's been around for years. I don't know the exact date, but 50 years. And yeah, the words are Akshayweduk Iqaq Iaaha Anach Awatana Iaaha Akshay Akatsitki Iaaha Aha Aha Aya.
For the 2 or 3 non-Tlingit listeners that we may have out there, could you translate roughly?
A rough translation is, oh, what a fine halibut hook that is. I'll put it in the water. What fine cedar bark twine is on it. Very simple, welcoming song. And so we sing
poetry.
It. Yeah, it's poetry.
Yeah.
You find that in a lot of these songs. They're, you know, they're both teaching moments and they're beautiful. I mean, I've got a couple other ones that I did that are just fun, you know, pure fun. So
when I was reading, there was an article in the paper about the concert, and it said this thing about you having had a dream about putting the hook song together, because in the dream you were listening to yourself drum.
Yeah.
And your drum, the drum morphed on you.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was just actually singing it, and I was on the drum set. Like, I was drumming.
In the dream.
In the dream. And
yeah.
So I was singing the song, you know, and all of a sudden it's like the beat's right here. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I just went, man, this is how this goes. You know, that kind of stuff. And it was like, holy cow, that works. And that was maybe a year and a half to 2 years ago. And like I was telling you before, I really don't remember dreams very often. So when I do remember them, I try to, you know, oh, that means something. You know, my mind was telling me something because a friend of mine had told me, Ed, you're Native. You've got to use that. That's part of who you are. And I thought that was amazing, discovering one of those light bulb moments. So,
have you had reaction from Natives about what you're doing?
You know what?
Bringing
been,
the two streams
yeah.
together?
I've had a lot of emails. I haven't, you know, I was in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Ketchikan, and of those people that were there, I've had nothing but positive comments. Of the people that were at the concert, they said it's an amazing mix. One person cried. I was like, that's great. They're not really sad songs, but it's very touching. They're very moving, and the musicianship that I brought in just brings everything up another level, you know. So we're playing these songs that, you know, are very cool and you know, exciting. But then you have that just cherry on the top of Jason Marsalis, Christian Fabian, and all these guys. They bring it out.
Marsalis has a lot of real disdain for the way jazz is taught in colleges.
Oh, yeah, all of them. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
So I'm wondering now, you said that you had studied jazz in college. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like his particular thing was that students in college do a very intellectual thing without ever performing,
mm-hmm.
and so they never have the feel of what it's like to get the to hear the audience breathe back into the music and then take that music back out. Was that your experience?
Not quite. I had a really good experience in college
where?
I was University of Idaho in Moscow, Idaho, and I studied with a phenomenal teacher named Dan Buckridge, and he was under the impression of, I want to get you graduated. You have to do a certain number of things to get that done, but inside of that, you can do whatever you want.
So no wonder you like Vibes if you went to UI.
That's Lionel Hampton.
It's Hampton's. That's where he seeded that program.
Yeah, he started that. It's the first jazz festival named after a jazz musician, Lionel Hampton Jazz Festival. And it's actually the first school of music named after a jazz festival, so named after a jazz musician. So I went to the Lionel Hampton School of Music.
Was that what attracted you?
Kind of. I was more going for the percussion teacher, though. He was he's a genius, and he's been up here a couple times for Region 5, like music festivals and things.
So you started drumming when you were very young,
mm-hmm.
okay, but it was in a tribal,
more so,
cultural context.
Yeah, so I was dancing and singing and drumming when I could walk, pretty much, and then before that, when my mom was carrying me in the dance group, so...
And then you said that suddenly you saw a trap set and it just sort of took you away.
Yeah, right? The first thing I actually saw was a violin. So I've played violin since I was six, and so I went through the orchestral Suzuki method and all that stuff and went through it, and then in fifth grade I actually auditioned for one of five spots in the percussion. I think there was like 35, 40 kids that auditioned, and I was lucky enough to get one of these spots in the percussion section. It was me and four other girls, and just one of those like moments. And like, oh, great, girls are in percussion. But anyway, so I went on, and it was great. It was an amazing transition where I got to play drums for a while.
And when you were playing the drum, could you feel? What am I trying to say? Was there ever a feel when you were in between those two places that you were coming between the worlds, that you were walking between the worlds before this?
Before this, I kept them separate on purpose because I have a high amount of respect for the culture, and I really do not want to disrespect anyone or any group because of this. I do this because I respect it. And so I found, in my opinion, a culturally relevant way to remember the past yet be a contemporary artist. And I'm a musician, and this is my genre. This is my choice of music. So I hadn't up until about a year ago.
Ed, the concert tonight starts at 7
o'clock? 8 o'clock.
Okay, and there's a fee?
Yes, $20 for adults and $15 for students and seniors.
Pay at the door?
Pay at the door, and you can buy at the online.
Okay. Good enough.
Hey, thank you very much, Pat.
Hey, thank you very much. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators in the Valley and Auk Bay. We're tuned on 103.1 in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek. It's 101.7. Gus Davis listens on K201 AM at 88.1 and Hoonah at 91.9. I'm Pat Moore. Thanks for listening.